Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa on this Tuesday, January 7, 2025. New traffic directives annoy motorists in South Sudan.
The highest number of victims killed and injured were documented in Warap State, accounting for 60% of the total number of civilian casualties. The majority of abductions took place in Central Equatoria State, constituting 69% of all documented abductions in the country.
And UN peacekeepers say violence still exists in South Sudan. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go for breaking news on Sudan. The U.S. Department of Treasury today said it is sanctioning Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo Musa, the leader of Sudan's paramilitary support forces. In addition, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken issued a determination that the RSF has perpetrated genocide in the Darfur region of Sudan during RSF's war against the Sudan Armed Forces. According to the Treasury Department, Dagalo is being sanctioned for his leadership of the RSF. The department says the RSF has committed documented war crimes and atrocities, including ethnically motivated killings and sexual violence. The U.S. government also is sanctioning seven companies and one other individual for their links to the RSF and the war in Sudan. The sanctions will block access to any assets Dagalo or the companies have in the United States. Entities that do business with him and the sanctioned companies also can be penalized. The UN mission in South Sudan says communal violence remains the primary driver of conflict in the country. That's according to its latest quarterly brief on violence in South Sudan. The UN says its peacekeepers documented 206 incidents affecting 792 civilians plus cases of sexual violence between July and September 2024. The report raises concerns on the steep increase of violence by 33%. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
In press statement Monday, the United Nations mission in South Sudan, known as UNMISS, says it has documented hundreds of incidents affecting civilians, including conflict-related sexual violence, between July and September 2024. Priyanka Shouheri, the UNMISS spokeswoman, says more needs to be done to create peace in South Sudan.
Despite a 4% decrease in violent incidents from 215 to 206, compared to the same reporting period in 2023, the total number of victims increased by 24% from 641 to 792. Additionally, while the number of civilians killed reduced by 7% from 329 to 299, injury statistics rose by 34%. From 231 to 310 during this reporting period.
Chauhari says the report particularly raises concerns on the steep increase of abductions and sexual-related violence in comparison to time frame last year. The former rose by 132% and the latter by 33%. She says on a positive note, as compared to the previous reporting period last year, from April to June 2024, a 35% reduction in violence incidents and 25% increase in civilian casualties were recorded. Here is Shouheri again.
While the highest number of victims killed and injured were documented in Warap State, accounting for 60% of the total number of civilian casualties, the majority of abductions took place in Central Equatoria State, constituting 69% of all documented abductions in the country. Most of these victims were men.
The report says tensions between government security forces and National Salvation Front splinter groups continue to threaten security and protection of civilians across the greater Equatorial region. Nicholas Asom, the Secretary General's Special Representative and head of UNMISS, urged the government of South Sudan to swiftly investigate human rights violations and abuses and hold all perpetrators to account. Shaweri read a statement on behalf of the UNMISS chief.
While UNMISS continues to proactively protect civilians, I call for concerted efforts by national, state and local authorities, as well as community leaders, to resolve long-standing grievances and find locally sustainable solutions to conflict drivers. Vitally, I urge the government of South Sudan to swiftly investigate human rights violations and abuses and hold all perpetrators to account.
She says the UN peacekeeping missions continues its land, air and riverine peacekeeping patrols, promoting community dialogues, enhancing security and supporting electoral preparations. Major General Lul Rai Kong, the South Sudan Army spokesperson, confirmed that the military has seen the reports but emphasized that the conflicts are primarily among civil populations.
The effort that we have been making to ensure that the conflict, intercommunal conflicts, are reduced by way of starting regular disarmament exercises, leading peace initiatives in the area. So these were the military measures we have been taking from time to time.
General Kong added that members of the military who violate human rights are being held accountable through martial courts. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Juba, where the South Sudan National Traffic Police Directorate issued a new directives reducing the validity of driving licenses from 1 year for nationals and 6 months to foreigners, sparking criticism from motorists and legal experts. For VOA News, Sheila Pony reports from Juba.
Drivers are questioning the legality of the directive issued by Major General Kon John Accord, director of South Sudan's Traffic Police. Both local and foreign drivers say the new directive, once implemented, brings increased fees and some delays and the risk of bribery. According to the order issued on January 4th, all drivers' license files now must be submitted to the Director for National Traffic for final approval. South Sudan's 2003 Traffic Act speculates that driving licenses are issued and renewed upon payment of prescribed fees, with a validity period of 5 years for nationals and 1 year for foreigners. Mashir Namzol, a Ugandan driver working in South Sudan for the past 5 years, says the six-month permit validity for foreigners is problematic.
It has disorganized our budget again. Something we've been planning for 12 months, now it's 6 months, which is totally not fair. For real, it will affect us. Because now, as for now, foreign drivers, their license, they are reading, they are expiring next year, 1 year ahead. Now, when you come and tell someone that your license is almost to expire 6 months, when it's indicating on it a year, someone will automatically say that you're cheating. Do not trust you.
Garang Abraham Malek, South Sudanese driver, questions the legality of the regulation.
What legal process did the traffic head take before issuing this? Because issues to do with money, issues to do with circulars are supposed to be passed through parliament or through maybe the cabinet. But it seems that the guy just walked up and issued this to make money for his department. So I'm really, really very disappointed. And I wish the concerned authorities could pick this up.
Another Juba resident, Bulen Alexander, says the new directive adds burdens to South Sudanese who are already overtaxed.
The renewal is not just free, it is with money. Others tell me that I should pay 200 SSP. Others say if I want urgently, then I have to 300,000 South Sudanese pound. And with that, I think reducing to one year for nationals and 6 months for the foreigners, it is going to be tough.
Advocate Philip Anyang Yong says the Trafficked Act of 2003 explicitly provides for a five-year validity for driving license.
One thing that is not very clear is where does the general, the director of traffic, gets the mandate or the legal basis to give orders on what should be done in regards to permits or driving permits. The law is very clear. Traffic Act 2003 is something that is what we're using now in South Sudan. That law clearly states under Section 35 that the validity of a driving permit should be 5 years.
Nyok urges drivers to challenge the directive through legal channels, including petitions to the Minister of Interior and the Minister of Justice.
Every other person has a right to sue anybody that, if she feels aggrieved, the administrative measures will be first taken. This thing be petitioned, the IGP petition, the Minister of Interior be petitioned. If nothing happens, then the Minister of Justice is onboarded.
Colonel John Kasara Kongnial, the spokesperson for the South Sudan National Police Service, clarified the directive's intent.
In reference to the Traffic Act of 2003, Chapter 4, Section 31.4, it is clearly articulated that driving license shall be valid until the expiry, at which point they must be renewed upon presentation to the licensing authority along with the requisite fee. Renewal process is critical not only for legal driving privileges, but also for the safety and regulation within the transport sector.
As the controversy continues, some drivers are calling for a review of the directive and staying with the South Sudan's existing Traffic Act. For VOA News, I am Sheila Aponi, reporting from Juba.
The United Nations says more than 30 million people, or over half of them children, need aid in Sudan after 20 months of conflict. The UN's humanitarian agency, OCHA, told the UN Security Council Monday that unprecedented international assistance is needed to address the crisis. The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, renewed a call for collective action, imposing sanctions on individuals and organizations whose actions have worsened Sudan's conflict.
This report only reaffirms what we already know. Sudan is experiencing one of the greatest human crises, not only of the day, but our lifetime. We can quiver over what we call it, but none of us can quiver over the fact that people are suffering in Sudan. Over 500,000 people, including children, are struggling to survive. 12 million people have fled their homes due to fighting between the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces. And now, as a result of 20 months of brutal civil war, over half of Sudan's population is acutely food insecure. The Sudanese authorities' decision to suspend their collaboration with the IPC system and impede international efforts to provide humanitarian assistance and prevent starvation is simply unacceptable. We urge the Transitional Sovereign Council to immediately re-engage with the IPC and take affirmative steps to address the widespread food insecurity. In addition, both military factions must facilitate the establishment of humanitarian hubs to support the flow of aid and cease all diversions and theft of it. Both the SAF and RSF have failed to meet their commitments under the 2023 Jeddah Declaration to allow and facilitate the rapid and unimpeded passage of humanitarian aid and to protect humanitarian workers.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, U.S. Congress certified President-elect Donald Trump's win of the 2024 elections. Find out how after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands, that is craft work. making the baskets and doing more of the clay artwork.
So I think I will go technology any day, anytime. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers. So for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice. So I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara last week announced that French forces will withdraw this month from the West African nation. Ivory Coast joins a growing list of countries, including the Sahelian states of Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, and Senegal, who have served military ties with their former colonial ruler. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Security analysts tell VOA the militaries of Ivory Coast and Senegal have the capabilities to counter extremist groups linked to Islamic State. But they're concerned about the countries of the Sahel, where local armies and Russian fighters have suffered significant losses since French troops withdrew. Leonard Mboulenziege, an analyst at Africa Risk Consulting in South Africa, says the exit of the French military from Francophone Africa is the strongest signal yet that it wants total independence from the former colonial power.
France has a very, very special post-colonial relationship on the continent, which no other former colonial power has. And the reason is because France understands that its position as a global power has been largely derived because of its heavy involvement in Francophone Africa. And a major reason behind this are the security agreements. As I said, you had the Accord de Défense, which allows France to intervene at the request of African countries when they're in trouble, but also the ability to implant military bases across these countries. And a lot of these agreements are very, very uneven. And in many instances, these countries try to carry out operations, military operations, but then France says they're not allowed to. I mean, even in Mali, for example, the Malian government wanted to negotiate with the violent extremist groups, and then France has been opposed to it.
Olawale Ojewale in Dakar for South Africa's Institute for Security Studies says Francophone Africans don't want to depend on France for development and security. He adds that French troops have been asked to leave because that's what most citizens want. Ojewale says new political players, like the military governments in the Sahel, need legitimacy, and the expulsion of French troops is supposed to be an indication of how strong they are. Actually, says the analyst, most new administrations are politically weak, with no plans to develop their countries. Ojewale says the withdrawal of French soldiers and their military technology does create what he refers to as security gaps. But he adds, the nature of counter-terrorism operations is changing as governments realize fighting fire with fire isn't always the right strategy.
I think the countries are also claiming that they've come of age and they are actually arguing that it's not about putting the boot on the ground. Maybe they need the other soft negotiation or soft partnership that probably provides capacity building, supply of armaments and weapons that these countries are actually going to use to engage in their counter-terrorism effort.
Ojewale says the exit of French troops is also about shifting geopolitics and Francophone Africa's desire for new alliances.
We also see some middle powers coming into play and even established powers. Russia is about the one supplanting France in some of these countries. China is also present on ground. And we are seeing a bit of United Arab Emirates. We are seeing Qatar. We are also seeing Turkey playing a very prominent role within these countries that we're talking about. So it's about moving away from unipolar bilateral arrangement in terms of partnership to a multipolar arrangement in which these countries are at liberty to choose who is going to be their partners.
So he says the void left by the exit of French soldiers could soon be filled by soldiers from other powers. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we move to Uganda, where the trial of a prominent opposition leader, Kizza Besigye, resumes in a military court. Besigye and his co-accused face charges of illegal possession of firearms in Kenya, Greece, and Switzerland. Both have denied the charges. Defense lawyers condemned the trial being held at a military court, which they contended lacks jurisdiction since their clients are civilians. For the latest development regarding the charges, VOA's Peter Clody reached Kato Tumusemi, a member of Besigye's defense team.
When we first appeared in the court martial, we raised issues that were regarding to lack of jurisdiction of the court martial to try Colonel Dr. Besigye and Haji Abed Rutari. We are still waiting to receive that ruling, but we could not receive it at the time because our legal team had not been fully constituted. So one of the businesses that we have in that court martial tomorrow is to receive the ruling on whether the court martial has the jurisdiction to try Dr. Colonel Besigye and Haji Abed Rutari on offenses allegedly related to security or possession of guns. In this case, where the accused people are civilian, that's one. Point number two is that whether the court martial has the jurisdiction to try civilians on offenses allegedly committed in Kenya, Nairobi, so as and Athens in Switzerland and then Geneva. These are the questions that we raised in our preliminary objection before the court martial. So we wait to receive that ruling and then we can get the way forward tomorrow.
With the constitution of the legal team representing Dr. Besigye and the ruling that will temporarily grant Martha Karua as part of this case, how significant is this development and what impact do you think this will have in the process?
This is an international case on offenses allegedly committed on a different territory, on a different country, a different republic, which is Kenya. And the people allegedly involved in the committing of the offense are unlawfully kidnapped and brought back to Uganda, and then they're being tried in Uganda on offenses allegedly committed in Athens, in Geneva, and also Kenya. And what you need to understand is that the reason as to why Dr. Besigye and his colleague at Haji Abed Rutari traveled to Kenya were on an invitation by Honorable Martha Karua only, her book launch. So that one can bring out the gist that Honorable Martha Karua, who is a senior counsel now here, who understands the dynamics of the politics and the legal framework of East Africa and Kenya as a whole, where the abduction took place, has a key important role to play in this trial in the general court martial. Regarding that, he has all the details relating to the alleged commission of the offense, who actually participated in the abduction and the kidnap of the two accused people, and therefore we need her as somebody who has experienced as a former Minister of Justice in Kenya, as a senior counsel in East Africa, which is a common law country, and the same common law that governs us here in Uganda. So she has a role to play as the senior and the lead lawyer.
What are your expectations of the resumption of the case on Tuesday?
Since we are almost 90% sure that our legal team is fully constituted, we shall receive a ruling. But unfortunately, you cannot tell whether the ruling will be in our favor or not our favor. Therefore, when we get the ruling, whether in our favor or not in our favor, then we shall get the next way forward. But we are right up to speed on how to proceed with the case, whether the ruling is not in our favor. If it is in our favor and they give a ruling that they have no jurisdiction to try civilian in the court martial, or that they have no jurisdiction to try people on offenses allegedly committed on a different territory, then our clients will be freed with unconditionally, and that's our prayer.
That's Kato Tumusime, a member of Besigye's defense team, speaking with VOA's Peter Clody. The U.S. Congress certified President-elect Donald Trump's win of the 2024 elections Monday on the fourth anniversary of Trump's supporters storming the U.S. Capitol to overturn the certification of Joe Biden's 2022 election win. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
4 years after the most tumultuous certification of election results in U.S. history, a quiet and orderly process Monday as the U.S. Congress certifies that Donald Trump won the 2024 election. The new Senate Majority Leader John Thune hailed the victory.
Republicans improved our margins in nearly 90% of counties in the United States and grew support with nearly every demographic group. The Republican coalition is broad and strong and growing. Now the work begins of delivering on our agenda. And Mr. President, Republicans are ready to go.
Despite her loss to Trump, Vice President Kamala Harris fulfilled her constitutional duty of presiding over the certification of the election. Only two other sitting U.S. vice presidents have presided over electoral counts after their losses for the presidency. Richard Nixon in 1961 and Al Gore in 2001.
For president and vice president.
In a taped statement earlier Monday, Harris emphasized the importance of a peaceful transfer of power.
This duty is a sacred obligation, one I will uphold, guided by love of country, loyalty to our Constitution, and my unwavering faith in the American people.
One analyst told VOA that duty is part of a long tradition of American leaders respecting the democratic process. Casey Burgat is the director of the Legislative Affairs Program at the George Washington University.
This is her role to play, that she's going to carry it out purposefully and as intended. And that just shows the commitment to a peaceful transfer of power, even and especially if you are the one on the losing end of the election. It shows a strength and a commitment to these ideals, something that we've taken for granted for too long and now need to return to.
But congressional Democrats say January 6, 2021 should not be forgotten. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Far too many individuals have tried to rewrite the history of January 6th, have tried to sweep the truth under the rug and pretend like the day was perfectly fine or even a moment of great patriotism. That is a lie, plain and simple.
In 2022, a congressional committee composed of seven Democrats and two Republicans placed the blame for January 6 on Trump for repeating lies about election fraud and allegedly inciting supporters to attack the U.S. Capitol.
Because we are not fair-weather patriots.
But Trump and many of his supporters have criticized the work of the committee as biased and suggested criminal defendants in January 6 cases should be pardoned. Trump will be sworn in for his second term as president on January 20th. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, January 7, 2025. We now leave you with a Balanda song from Western Bahr al Ghazal State.
Hotel big bano aini
navanga
navanga navanga matino ini
navanga
nama voice on mo wise bano ndini nabande nama voice on mo wise bano ndini navanga vanga indong no vanga inde navanga mori welo kwito disine kwuta mori welo kwito Sinesi sanyo navanga matino ini navande navanga navanga yo
navanga
navanga matino ini
navanga
navanga navanga yo
navanga
make bigger model big bano aini
navanga
etik paso model big bano aini
navanga
navanga navanga matino ini
navanga.
We've been listening to a Balanda song, and I must tell you, the Balanda I found in Western Bahr al Ghazal State, especially in the town of Wau. When you go to Wau, when you want to greet people, you say, meh. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaru, and engineer, Joe Jill, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.